This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Joseph Sternberg, who writes Political Economics, the column for the Wall Street Journal editorial board. He's based in London. However, the story we turn to now is not based anywhere. It's worldwide inflation. The numbers, first called transitory or temporary, are now accepted worldwide as a problem for governments, for consumers, and for the recovery. I begin with the surprise that within these last days, while Joe was traveling in Germany, while COP26 was looking to the distant future, 2050, 2070, the temporary transitory inflation disappeared and we had genuine alarm. We also have some surprising disappointment from consumer confidence. It was 75 in 1980 when Ronald Reagan was elected president during double-digit inflation. 75. Consumer confidence, University of Michigan. It is now 66.8. Despite the fact that we have evidence in the U.S. that we're shopping. We have evidence in the United Kingdom that they're shopping. And yet, inflation is upon us. Joe, you wrote inflation last winter. We've talked about this again and again. So I know you're not a person to gloat. What can we learn from the hesitation of the central bankers, the remaining reluctance of the central bankers, Andrew Bailey at the Bank of England, Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, to reverse their happy talk and start to tighten? What can we learn?
Well, you know, the problem that they've got is they're trapped. And it is a trap of their own making. So, I mean, on the one hand, clearly we have inflation now, which caught them by surprise because for a decade after the 2008 financial crisis, they had trained themselves to believe that they could operate very loose monetary policies without generating inflation. Now, all of a sudden, we have it. And yet they are terrified of dialing back all of this monetary stimulus because they think that it has dawned on them that financial markets are very dependent on the stimulus. And so if they withdraw it now, yes, that will help them fight inflation, but you know, with unknown consequences for the financial markets. And meanwhile, the political class is not helping at all because the trend both in the U.S. and really across developed economies has been to pile on the fiscal stimulus, especially on the demand side of the economy, to try to stoke economic growth. But, of course, if you've not done anything to bolster the supply side of the economy, that's going to tend to be a very inflationary policy mix. So I think that the central banks find themselves kind of trapped by the situation now. And it is because the deeper that they have dug on these policies over the past 12 or 13 years or so, the harder it is becoming for them to emerge.
Headline from the Wall Street Journal. Let's be specific about inflation. Tyson Foods raises meat prices as costs escalate. Now, within this, there are contradictions. Tyson Foods reported a jump in sales after sharply raising prices. That's right. Reported a jump in sales after sharply raising prices for its beef, chicken, and pork, citing growing costs the company said were likely to persist. So they raised prices, and they had better sales. The Arkansas-based meat giant lifted prices across all its major divisions. Why? Why did they have to lift prices? Well, not only is because the makings of their meat product are more expensive to them, the wholesale, they're paying more for their workers. And Joe, I remember from the 20th century that the part of inflation that most worries economists, the surprised ones and the unsurprised ones, is wages. When wages start the push on inflation, it is doubly, triply, quadruply difficult to contain that. Are we now in a wage push on inflation?
Sort of. I mean, I've always been a little skeptical about that wage push theory of inflation because I don't think that it completely accurately reflects the kind of conversation people actually have with their bosses. I mean, it's not a matter that you go into your boss and say, well, I think that the inflation rate for the coming year is going to be 4%. so I need you to give me a 5% raise. I think that it tends to be a little less organized than that in the economy, and it's not always clear exactly which is the chicken and which is the egg there. I think that the bigger thing that drives this is that companies are figuring out that they have the capacity to pass these prices on to consumers. I mean, this has been a big part of the story that hasn't always registered, widely over the past 6 to 9 months, is just the number of companies across all sorts of markets that have been testing the waters in terms of price increases to figure out first how high can they raise their prices, and then once they know that, they start figuring out how high they can afford to bid up wages to try to attract workers. And so I think that is probably a certain amount of what you're going to end up seeing here. And then, of course, I mean, yes, that can sort of fold into demands from workers, especially potentially new hires or people who are changing jobs for higher wages, because they then are trying to make up for the increase in the cost of living that they have experienced. But the point of all of this is that these are just such complicated phenomena. And economists, even the professional economists, or especially the professional economists, don't have a really well-developed understanding of how these phenomena work, of how all of these factors interact with each other. So, of course, we shouldn't be surprised that they seem to have all been caught flat-footed by the way that the real living, breathing economy around us has ended up responding to all of these shocks.
We come to wages. Wages is how we measure how we're doing, what wage you take home each week. And the headline here is, workers take a pay cut as inflation erodes wage gains. The way I translate this, Joe, is that while you get a raise, the cost at the market, the cost at the pump, the cost for your heating oil have gone up to the point that you're going backwards. That's not a condition that America will tolerate for long. Is there a patch for that? Do we put pressure on the Washington? Do we put pressure on the Federal Reserve? What do we do about it, Joe?
The real wage issue is definitely going to be a major political problem, because that is the piece of economic data that people actually experience. So, I mean, look, we always have these discussions about nominal gross domestic product, like, you know, is the economy growing in nominal terms or wages increasing in nominal terms? That doesn't matter. I mean, what people, including anyone listening to this program right now, will know intuitively is that what you know is kind of what you have coming in every month and then what you are spending. And sort of you can figure out every month whether you're spending more than you used to and what kind of strain that's putting on your household budget if your wages haven't caught up to that spending. So, I mean, this inflation-adjusted wage decline that people are experiencing, where the wage growth is not keeping up with the increase in consumer prices, and in fact is probably falling further behind than the official data suggests, because there are a lot of things that people pay for that the inflation data do not capture accurately. And this is the point at which it becomes a major political problem, both for the Fed and for elected leaders, because as households start noticing that pain, that is the point at which the voters really realize something is going badly awry in the economy.
What can go wrong and why? This is my favorite part, Joe. Taxes. Taxes worry most everyone, but especially people who see what the Build Back Better plan means for their new year. Not only are wages going to be inadequate for the inflation, but this. According to the Wall Street Journal, your paper, editorial, under the Democratic plan, Build Back Better, the combined U.S. top rate would climb to 57.4% by 2026. The U.S. would leap over 22 other countries in the OECD tax ranking, including Italy at 47.2, Sweden at 52.3, France at 55.4. Germany comes in at a relative bargain at 47.2. So what we're looking at here is we're going to have the number one tax bite in the OECD on the planet. That is not a positive, to my interpretation. That is not going to control inflation. That is not going to satisfy the public. Do I read these taxes correctly? Is this something that's coming our way And is this going to make us moderate our consumption, moderate our confidence?
Well, I think that if the Democrats get their way, the tax increases are definitely coming, because that is the only way you can pay for all of the spending, and especially the long-term social spending that they want to do. And in fact, this is something that's been very dishonest about the way that people on the political left have been talking about these Biden bills, in particular the massive entitlement expansion in the Build Back Better bill that they're currently debating, because the claim is always that you can pay for it if you just tax the rich more or tax the big corporations. There are two problems with that. I mean, there's not enough money there, which is why this is not how Europe pays for the European welfare state. European middle class members pay for their benefits. They pay in the form of consumption taxes like the VAT on every purchase, and they pay in much higher personal income taxes at much lower levels of income than Americans are accustomed to. You know, in the UK, the 40% income tax rate kicks in at something like only, I think it's about $80,000 of personal income each year. You're already paying that very high rate. So I think that, you know, there's this dishonesty there about how the high taxes are definitely coming. And that potentially fuels the inflation problem, because, you know, what that is going to do is discourage investment in more supply at exactly the time when what we have is too little supply to meet the demand. So I do not understand how people think that the economics of this are going to work out in any sort of way that is not going to be bad for the middle class.
I want to make certain I understand correctly. The administration says that the Build Back Better is paid for from the taxes that I just pointed to. Is that where they say the money's coming? If they don't have the money, they say because these taxes will go forward to 2026, we will have the money. Is that correct, Joe?
Yes. I mean, what they are claiming is that they are going to do 10 years worth of tax increases, and that is going to fund 4 or 5 years worth of entitlement spending, which already tells you that there's a bit of a problem once you get into the next 10 years after the decade that we're talking about right now. But, you know, there's also going to be this problem where they habitually overestimate the amount of revenue that they can raise from increasing tax rates, because the economic models they use often do not account for the changing incentives of tax policy itself. So their model doesn't account for the fact that as you tax investment income or as you tax labor more, you will tend to get less of those things. So I think that, you know, it's important to understand here that, I mean, first off, the tax man is coming for you if you're in the middle class, if not in this bill, then soon and in a big way. And we also need to not kid ourselves about the economic consequences of that, you know, whether it's in terms of inflation or slower growth and slower wage growth.
John Kennedy, following the reporting from the Wall Street Journal, cut the top tax rate from 91 to 70. Ronald Reagan in 1981 cut the top tax rate from 70 to 50. Again in 1986, from 50 to 28. The prosperity of these last decades followed these tax cuts. Now the proposal by the administration is to return to 57% and more on its way back to 90? Question mark. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London. When we come back, life in London during the late pandemic, after COP26, and before winter closes in without adequate heat. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.